Nothing is ever lost but time, which in the end is meaningless. The only thing you ever lose is time. The only thing you ever lose is time. But time is meaningless. Time is but a little hindrance to eternity. Quite meaningless to the real teacher of the world. That's okay. What do y'all think about the idea of eternal life? Does that idea turn everybody on? I like to get a little poll. How many people in here would like to live forever?
Not in this life.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Most of us would, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the Course is saying the only thing that we ever lose is time, but time is meaningless. Time is just a little hindrance. We are eternal. So us going through the things that we go through in time, it's just a little hindrance. We are eternal. So the things that we're going through in time is just a little hindrance. He says, but since you do believe in time, I love this, why should you waste time going nowhere? He said, since we believe in time, so why should we waste time going nowhere? When we really could use time to reach a goal that's as high as learning can achieve. We can use this time to achieve a goal that is as high as you can possibly learn. Are y'all with me? Are you willing to use time to achieve the highest possible goal you can? Okay, all right. He says, now don't think that the way to heaven's gate is difficult at all. Now the Course describes heaven as perfect happiness. Okay, so if the word heaven kind of trips you out because of your religious abuse. Okay, heaven, oh, don't say heaven, say anything but heaven. You know, I was brought up Southern Baptist and Catholic. Now you talking about a deep combination. I learned so many different kinds of sins, it was ridiculous. Everything I liked to do when I was a child was a sin. It was like, what's the definition of a sin? Anything I like. That's what I used to say when I was a kid. What's a sin? Anything I like. It's like, people's idea of heaven was so boring to me. It was like, the whole idea of sitting around plucking on a harp did not turn to be on, you know? It didn't. So the Course says, okay, if you want to achieve the highest goal you can possibly achieve, the first thing you do is you have to think that the way to achieve it isn't difficult. If you want to reach the highest goal you can possibly achieve, you have to tell yourself that the way to the heaven's gate, the happiness, isn't difficult at all. And what is the hardest thing in the world for me to say about my problems? That it's not difficult at all. What's the hardest thing for me to say about my life? That it's not difficult at all. So in order to reach the highest goal we could possibly achieve, we have to start thinking that the way for you to be happy isn't difficult. It isn't difficult for you to be happy. It isn't difficult for you to be happy. It isn't difficult for me to be happy. It isn't difficult. Got it? Okay, what's the first thought? No, okay. When abounding with enthusiasm, leaping out of their seats with joy, it's not difficult. It's so funny. Okay, so then. And I'm telling you, this is a joke book from God. Boy, if y'all let me read this book to y'all sometime, y'all crack up. All right. Okay, he says, nothing you undertake with certain purpose and high resolve and happy confidence, holding each other's hand and keeping step to the song of heaven is difficult to do. Now, that sounds like some serious multitasking to me. First, I got to undertake it with certain purpose and high resolve. Then at the same time, I have to have happy confidence. Then I have to hold your hand while I keep the beat to some song. And he said that isn't difficult. That sounds like a whole lot to do. He says, but if you actually had certain purpose, high resolve, and happy confidence, and we reached out to each other, then nothing would be difficult. But it's hard indeed to wander off alone and miserable down a road that leads to nothing and that has no purpose. Okay, let me get that again. It's hard indeed to wander off alone and miserable down a road that leads to nothing and that has no purpose. So if the road is hard, if your life is hard, it only means you have wandered off alone and miserable down a road that leads to nothing and that has no purpose. So a person that feels like their life is hard, you have wandered off alone and miserable down a road that leads to nothing and you are on a path that has no purpose. God, did anybody else hear that beside me? That was deep. God gave his teacher to replace the teacher you made, not to conflict with it. So you've been replaced as your own teacher. So you've already been replaced. I don't know how to tell you this, but you've already been replaced. As your own teacher, you've already been replaced. You're no longer teaching yourself. Hello? You're no longer teaching yourself. I'm no longer teaching myself. We're no longer teaching ourselves. We're no longer teaching ourselves. We have been fired. We have been replaced. Yes. We are applying for unemployment. We're in the office. We've been some laid off bad teachers. You know, that's it. I can just kind of feel that the scene with the check gonna be this time, you know. Because we've been replaced, okay. God replaced our teacher. And so Cora says, if God wants your teacher to be replaced, it's gonna be replaced. Now this is the deepest definition of time I've ever heard. Let me see if you can get it with me. It says, time lasted but an instant in your mind, with no effect upon eternity. So is all time past and everything exactly as it was before the way to nothingness was made. The tiny tick of time in which your first mistake was made and all of your mistakes within that one mistake, that same instant held also the correction for that mistake and all the mistakes that came within the first mistake. And so in that tiny instant, time was gone, for that was all time ever was, just a tiny instant. What God gave answer to is answered and is gone. To you who still believe you live in time and don't know that it's gone, that's us. We're the ones who still believe we live in time and don't know it's gone. I don't know time is gone, and I believe in time. What about you?
Yeah.
So it's talking about us. It's talking about us. So to you who still... It's like, who's it talking to? You? Don't you fit the definition? Don't you believe it's like 12-12? Yes, well, he's talking to you. Okay. To you who still believe you live in time and know not it is gone, the Holy Spirit, your higher self, still guides you through the infinitely small and senseless maze you still perceive in time. Though this senseless maze has long since gone, you think you live in what is past. Each thing you look upon was something you saw an instant a long time ago before its unreality gave way to truth. Not one illusion still remains unanswered in your mind. Your uncertainty was brought to certainty so long ago that it's hard indeed to hold your uncertainty to your heart as if your uncertainty were before you still.
Read that again.
It sounds like English, but I don't know what the hell the boy just said. It sounds just like I was talking English, but I don't know what the hell I just read. Did anybody in here know what I just read? Okay, I'm going to tell you. We are eternal. So time just lasted an instant in our mind, but us fooling around in time didn't have no effect at all on eternity. So everything that we're looking at is really past. Everything is exactly the way it was before you took this detour into time. See, we just took a detour into having this physical experience. The Course says, and everything is still the way it was before you decide to have this physical experience. Everything is okay. When you get through having this physical experience, everything is okay, because you're going to go back to where you were before you had this experience. And where you were before you had this experience is absolutely okay. So go ahead and realize this is just a tiny tick of time. But it's already been corrected. Everything you're ever going to do, every mistake you're ever going to make, has already been corrected. It's already gone. It's already over. Listen to what they just said. What y'all think about that? But I don't see it. Right? Because I'm the one who still believes I live in time and don't know that it's gone. So I need to understand that God is leading me around through this maze. The Course says this is just a big old maze, and that our higher self is leading us around in the maze, and that we think we live in what is past. Everything you look upon is something. This is part of God me when it says everything you look at is something you saw an instant long ago before its unreality gave way to truth. Everything I'm looking at is something that I thought was real before I realized it wasn't. Everything you're looking at is something that you thought was real before you realized it wasn't. So when you look at me, you're looking at something that, when you look at my body, you're looking at something that you thought was real until you realized that it wasn't. Everything you're looking at is what you thought was real until you realized it wasn't. What y'all think of that? That's deep, man. So that means that everything I'm looking at is already gone. But I don't know it. Got it? I don't know it. And since I don't know it, then I have the Holy Spirit that's guiding me through this maze that I made for myself. Whew.
How does the Course define eternity at all? Like it redefines heaven?
Well, eternity is heaven. Eternity is, I like, he says eternal is just permanent. I love that. It says to be eternal means to be permanent. Doesn't that sound cool? To be eternal means to be permanent. I am permanent. This is permanent. And so it just told us that the impermanent just kind of dipped into the permanent just for an instant, but we already back into the permanent. And we're just looking at what we went through when we thought we were here. Woo, that's deep. That's so deep. You know. And then my mind said, well, what does it have to do with my utility bill?
Yeah.
Do y'all have that part of your mind?
Yeah.
So what that's got to do with me needing my oil changed? I don't realize my oil changing problem has already been solved. So you're supposed to ask to just recognize that your problem has already been solved. I just want to recognize my problem has already been solved. He says, that's what the Course says we should say. I just want to recognize my problems. I heard you say my problems have already been solved. I just want you to help me recognize my problems have already been solved. I want to see that I have no fear. I want to see that I have no lack. I want to see that I have no loneliness. I want to see that I have no guilt, no fear, no sickness. I want to see it. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. There is not one fear that you have that's still unanswered in your mind. You have received the answer to every single problem you ever have. So I want to recognize it. If that's true, what I need to do is to ask to recognize it. If all my problems have been solved, I would like to recognize my problem have been solved. That's what the Course said we're supposed to say. That's deep. Man, that's deep. That is so deep. Any questions about any of that?
That just seems to be the Course. Yeah. When I lose trust or whatever, something in my way is remembering that I'm just not recognizing it, that it's really there. All the time. Permanently.
It wasn't so great that he told us in that paragraph that the truth is, you know, I was playing around in the body. We just dipped in that for a minute, and then we already back into our permanent identity. That's what I love about this, because this book talks to me as if I'm not a friggin' body. It talks to me as if I'm not just only a human being. I mean, I like being a human being, but dog, I've done it a long time. I'm ready to move on. But people who are still addicted to being human beings, every time you talk about going beyond being one, they think you're crazy. Because they don't realize there's nothing better than with the state that they're in, which is not a very pleasant state. They would be smiling more. You know what I'm saying? So I want to join with people who know they're human beings, but also know they have a spiritual identity that they want to get in touch with. And sometimes we want to talk to each other from our spiritual identity, from our real identity. That identity beyond being a man or a woman or black or white or young or old. You know, I want to communicate to you beyond all the separations that we made up about each other so that we can stay apart from each other. You know, I want to experience who you are beyond your sex, beyond your body, beyond even what you think you are. I want to get to the real you, not the one that's learned this script from the world that it keeps trying to act out that don't make it happy. I want to talk to that one. I want to talk to the real you. And I want, you know what I'm saying? That's what I'm studying for, and that's what I'm so glad. Look at page 412. It's going to be a trip when you jump over to the next thing Spirit told us to go into. It's on page 412. It's called The Second Obstacle to Peace. Okay, what is the second thing that's keeping me from being peaceful? What's the second thing that's keeping me from being peaceful? Well, I believe that my body is valuable. For what my body offers, I believe my body is valuable. For what my body offers, I believe my body is valuable. This belief is the second obstacle to peace.
What's the first one?
The first obstacle to peace is, I know what I'm talking about, the desire to get rid of it. That's what he says right there in the book. What's the first obstacle to me being peace? Your desire to get rid of it, Earl. The first obstacle to your peace is you're too quick to get rid of it. What's the second obstacle to your peace? Well, you believe the body is valuable for what it offers, and that's your second obstacle to peace. You're so hung up on the body. It's all about the body. Wow. And I do believe the body is valuable for what it has to offer. I do, and I don't have permanent peace. Let me see. Could there be a connection? I do believe the body is valuable, and I don't have permanent peace. He's right. That is an obstacle to my peace, because I spend most of the time worrying about my body and worrying about what's going to happen to my body. Can I feed my body? Can I clothe my body? Can I house my body? Can I get somebody to touch my body? Can I touch somebody else's body? Can I do what's with, you know, it's all about the body. Anybody else? Anybody else can relate to what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Absolutely. Can we admit that we believe the body is valuable for what it offers?
Yes.
And can we admit that we don't experience permanent peace?
Yes.
Okay. That's okay. There's a connection. But somehow I think that if I give up the value of the body, then I won't be able to enjoy the body. I think somehow another discourse, this is another book trying to tell me it's not okay to enjoy my body. That's what I didn't like about most spiritual books. They act like it wasn't okay for me to enjoy my body. And I didn't like that. So when I hear stuff like that, it makes me believe that somehow it's trying to make me not appreciate or enjoy the body. Anybody else relate to that, what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I didn't realize I wasn't hearing what it was saying. It's the belief the body is valuable for what the body offers. The body isn't valuable for what the body offers. The body isn't valuable for what the body offers. Because the body isn't offering you anything. Your body isn't offering you anything. Have you ever said that in your life? My body is not offering me anything.
No.
I've never said that in my life. Yeah. It's a trip to read a book where you say stuff you literally have never said in your life. My body isn't valuable for what my body offers. My body is valuable for what I offer. Because if I'm going to give it to you, I got to give it to you through my body. So my body is valuable for what I offers. And the belief that my body is valuable for what my body offers is the second obstacle to peace, is believing that my body is valuable just because it's a body. Wow, that's deep. And if you are really attracted to guilt, you do not want peace. The second obstacle that peace must flow across, which is the belief that the body is valuable for what it offers, is closely related to the first, which is the desire to get rid of it, is the belief that the body is valuable for what the body offers. Because here is the attraction of guilt made manifest in the body and seen in the body. This is the value you think peace would rob you of. You think that in order for you to have peace, you have to give up the body. You think that in order to have peace, you have to give up the body. And you don't want to give up the body because you believe that to dispossess the body would leave you homeless. Because you think you live in a body. Whew. And because I'm afraid to leave my body, I would deny a home to peace. Because the value of my body, the sacrifice, the value of my body, I feel like that's too great a sacrifice to make, that too much would be asked of me to somehow not value my body above all things. But letting go of your value of the body, is that a sacrifice or is letting go of the value of the body a release? What has your body really given you that justifies your strange belief that in your body lies your salvation? Phew! That's a deep question, you all. What has your body really given you that justifies your strange belief that in your body lies your happiness? What has the body really given you that justifies your strange belief that in the body lies salvation? If you believe that in the body lies salvation is the belief in death. Okay, the belief in death is me believing that all of my happiness lies in my body. The belief in death is a belief that all of my happiness lies in my body. Because the body doesn't last. So when all of my belief is in the value of my body, then I put all my belief in something that doesn't last. And if I put my belief in something that doesn't last, then it ends. And that's where the belief in death comes from, because death is nothing but an illusion of an end. So every time I put all of my belief in something that's temporary, I'm just guaranteeing that I'm going to create something for myself that ends. And I don't want to keep creating stuff for me that ends. So if I want to make sure I can have love that's permanent, then I have to start focusing in on permanent love. If I want to have a happiness that never ends, then I have to start asking for a constant happiness. You see what we're saying? If I really want to go, I got to go for the real deal now. Everything that, if that makes so much sense. If I want something to last, I have to ask for it to be permanent. And it's not going to be permanent unless it's eternal. So the only way I can keep losing, if the only way you can stop losing is to stop asking for things that end. Give me some feedback. What y'all think of that?
But things change in this life all the time. How can we have permanence?
That's it. The way you have permanence is to stop focusing on it.
Again.
The way to have permanence is to start to focus on permanence, even in an impermanent world. Just because everything here is impermanent doesn't mean I can't ask for the permanent. And so the Course is saying, hey, y'all, you're a group of people that finally want to have something that lasts and doesn't end. You're the people who finally really want a happiness that you can depend on. Okay, this is the way you do it. The first thing you do is you stop telling yourself that it's difficult to have it. The next thing you do is to start asking for what lasts when you're together. To start asking for permanent joy, permanent happiness, permanent peace. Start focusing on your permanent identity. And as you focus on your permanent identity, you'll start to keep things in your experience that you love longer and longer. The things that you love will start to last longer and longer if you start asking for it permanently. Yeah.
Or another way to look at it, a lot of people, you know, will ask me what the Course is or whatever, and I always like to just say that it turns your awareness upside down and that everything you thought was real is unreal. Everything you thought was unreal is real, so that's focusing on permanence and seeing the impermanent. It's just another way of saying it, but it's sometimes hard to focus on.
And you forget how scary that statement is to somebody who doesn't understand what you just said. Well, you think you just said something to comfort somebody, and you just scared them out of their minds. And you hear everything you thought was real isn't real, and everything that isn't real is what's real. The average person is not glad to hear that at all. You know what I'm saying? It's the absolute truth. That's what's such a trip about it, you know. Because we came here on purpose, and we ain't that happy about it. You know, we got in our car and drove over here. We're not exactly skipping up and down, you know what I'm saying? So you know your cousin Elmo ain't ready to hear that, you know what I'm saying? Okay. But that's what's so cool, though, when you're finally around people that you can say stuff like that to, and they know what the heck you're talking about, that we've actually reached the point where we are glad to know that the unreal isn't real. I'm glad to know the fear isn't real. I'm glad to know the anger and the guilt and the separation and the death and the attack and all that stuff that I'm seeing around me. That's not the way it is in reality. Because this world always taught me that the painful stuff was reality and everything that was cool is the dream. And don't you see how that screws us up? If you think reality is pain, then you'll never believe it's possible for you to be happy. Because you think reality is unhappiness. So to be real, you got to be miserable. If you want to be realer than anybody else, you're going to be miserable than anybody else. So a person that's more miserable than anybody else is just a person that's trying to be real. I don't know what the hell I just said, but I know it's good. I was like, when I quote that, that's on tape. This is becoming more and more valuable. Because now it's getting to the point I don't know what the hell I said myself. That's turning me on, man.
Does that mean it was real?
That means it must have been. It must have been. If I didn't have nothing to do with it, it must have been the truth. This is some funny stuff, boy. Oh God, yes. Okay. And so I used to ask God, where does death come from? You know, like why we have to die. When I was a kid, I just totally upset me that the people I loved around me was gonna die. I just thought that was just the cruelest thing I could imagine. And he says, well, yeah, it looks like that because you're having an experience of exploring the impermanent. You decided to come into an experience where you could experience change and coming and going and beginning and ending. And you're believing in what's temporary, so that means you're believing in what doesn't last. So therefore, yes, it looks like there are endings to things. Yes, it looks like there's death. It's because you believe in the temporary. You even believe you are temporary. So why are you shocked when something leaves? How can I use that to my advantage? How can you use that to your advantage? You can look at it this way now. You're going to let everything that blocks your happiness leave. Let everything that blocks my happiness leave. Anybody else want to say that? Let everything that blocks my happiness leave. Because the one thing we know that can really happen here is that things can leave us. Mm-hmm. All of us have had that experience, right? Of something leaving us. So we know we do have the power of leaving. And that's a very powerful gift. We can master the power of rejection. We got it down to a fine art. We know everything about rejection, right? So that means we could reject lack. We can reject sickness. We can reject fear. We can reject. We can reject. We can reject. I love that. I know I can reject. What about you? Yeah. It's about time somebody used our talents. It feels so good to finally be used. That's why I know there's a God, because even the way I am can be used for the good of everybody. Whew. Could you ask for permanent happiness even though you don't know how to achieve it?
Sure.
Okay, that's all we're being asked to do. You're not being asked to know how to get it. You're just being asked to request it. And I'm going to request it. I'm going to take a chance. I ask for permanent happiness. I want to recognize my permanent happiness. Anybody else want to say it? You don't have to, but it's good. Just say it. I ask to recognize my permanent happiness. That does not sound so cool when other people join you.
Earl?
Mm-hmm.
You're a holy child of God, right?
That's the rumor.
But there's a body sitting right there, right?
There is a body that appears to be sitting right here.
So let's pretend that that body is a serial killer.
Alrighty. I have done that.
You're still a holy child of God.
Mm-hmm.
But within the framework of this this perceived reality that we exist in at this moment,
mm-hmm.
You can't just say, that's okay, you're forgiven, you're a serial killer, go out there and kill some more.
Look at it this way. Anything that you come up with that makes you feel justified in not forgiving, then you know that's the wrong way you're looking at it before you even ask the question. Anytime you're even trying to look at it any kind of way that it will come up in your mind that it wouldn't be okay to forgive, that's how you know it's your ego that's directing the question. Because your ego is going to always look for a justification for you not to forgive. And that's what it's doing now. It's trying to come up with a justification for not forgiving. But when you do that, it keeps you unforgiven. It keeps you limited, and it keeps you stuck in the place that you're in. That's what's so deep about it. There nobody has to explain to us why it's justified to forgive anybody. It's not up to us to judge whether or not somebody's justified to be forgiven. That's not even what we're supposed to be sitting here doing. What we're supposed to be doing is remembering that we deserve to be forgiven. That's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be remembering that we deserve to have the good stuff happen to us. See, like that question of, you know, go out there and do it again. That's an incompatible statement. I forgive you and go out and attack are two mutually exclusive sides of the coin. There's no such thing as forgive and attack. So if there's true forgiveness, there can be no attack. If there's true forgiveness, even if he existed, he couldn't go out and kill nobody else if he was truly forgiven. If he was truly forgiven, it would neutralize all of his violent tendencies. He wouldn't ever kill anybody or hurt anybody. If we ever loved each other just one instant, we would totally heal each other of every lack of love that everybody in this room has if we would ever just love each other for just one friggin' instant. But we're busy trying to decide whether or not we deserve it. And who deserves it and who doesn't deserve it and who, you know, and so every time I do that, I'm excluding myself from the circle of healing, and I don't know it. You know, I'm putting me outside of the healing every time I try to put you outside of the healing, because you're me. So as soon as you go outside, I go outside. So now, even if I don't understand, I just say to people, God is the love in which I forgive you. There's a lesson in the workbook that says that. Now check out what I'm saying. God is the love in which I forgive you. Who can tell what's happening with that statement that makes it kind of different from most forgiveness statements?
Well, he's taking it from you.
Taking it out the ego. It's taking it, yeah, it's like, you know, something. I can't stand you. But God is the love in which I forgive you. See what I'm saying? I don't have none. So I'm going to go forgive you with God's love. That's deep, y'all. That absolves me from having to try to make myself feel a way about you that I don't feel right now. Because I can let God's love forgive you. And I think that's so cool, because then I can move on and you can move on, and we won't be stuck around trying to figure out how to forgive each other for the next 50 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't stand you, God forgives you, right on. See you around. I can do that. I can do that. Finally, God asked me to do something I'm capable of. See, that's too easy. And I feel too guilty to let myself have it that easy. I couldn't just accept that idea as true. And that would be such a simple idea. But I won't do it because I don't think I deserve it to be that easy. Any of you noticing you doing that? That's a part that just doesn't want to accept that it could be that easy, that you could still hold that grievance against your mama and still let God's love forgive her, and you're okay. That's kind of deep, y'all. Because I still want to make some of my feelings wrong. See, I don't want to make it okay for me to hate you, and still you experience forgiveness. I want to believe one of my emotions are wrong. And so the Course is getting me to understand, hey man, your emotions are just your emotions. Your feelings are just your feelings.
Which is another question. Are feelings real? Or are feelings an illusion?
The feelings we have are illusions.
Or emotions.
The feelings we have are illusions because the feelings we have change.
Okay.
Thank God. Thank God our feelings are illusions. Thanks God these feelings that we have in the body change. Whoa, that's good news. I'm so glad. I only got two choices. To be in a feeling that is wonderful and never ends, or to be in feelings that constantly change. Well, that means I could have my feelings constantly changing to a better and 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 better feeling.
Praise God.
See? I could change that way. That's where we headed. We change it into automatic happiness.
But do you think that's possible while we're in this body?
Yes. As long as we're the ones that are not in charge of the process. You know what I'm saying? If the Holy Spirit, if our higher self, if God's in charge of the process, all things are possible. As soon as I get in charge of the process, all things are not possible.
Well, how do I tell my brain to shut up and listen to God?
Well, what's going to happen is that the things that's going to start happening to you through God is going to be so cool that you won't be tempted by the part of you that'll pull you back into some crap. So don't worry about that. The attraction of this thing that you're getting ready to attract to you, it's going to be so powerful that it'll pull you beyond any temptation to listen to your ego. Because your ego won't have nothing to offer you that'll compare to what you finally starting to experience. So all that stuff you used to try to force yourself not to do, it don't mean nothing to you. Because you're having such a good time, that was like a small fun. You know, God, that is so cool. God, that is so cool. And all I have to do to allow myself to have that is to start asking to have my peace permanently. I don't want there to be any instant that Earl Purdy suffers. I don't want to suffer for a lesson. Forget that. Okay? I want to resign from, I got to suffer to learn a lesson. It is good that you suffer because you learn a lesson, because that's what makes the suffering good, because you learn the lesson. Well, I want to retire from suffering lessons. I'm willing to learn the lesson without the pain. I'm willing to learn the lesson without the pain. Are you willing to learn the lesson without the pain? Are you willing to even conceive of the idea of, I am willing to learn the lesson without the pain? If I'm going to get the lesson, that's cool. As long as I get the lesson, everything is cool. So it's not like I skipped over nothing because I didn't suffer. You know, if I got the lesson, I got the lesson. Okay, but you have to ask for it. You know, it's a symbol of your willingness to have it. Just ask for it. I want the lesson without the suffering, with a little prosperity on the side. I'm putting in my order right now. Bring me a glass of water. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to add one thing. She was asking about, do we forgive the serial killer? That's a common thing you hear in course classes, you know, the Hitler question of, do we forgive Hitler, and so on and so on. And the course concept of forgiveness has nothing to do with the body in the first place. And it's not. And of course, forgiveness is not talking about forgiving people for what they may have done in this world, because it's asking us to forgive them for what has not really even happened in the first place. So it's not addressing itself to how we handle the body. We very well might forgive a serial killer, and he very well might be forgiven when he's in the electric chair or incarcerated. So the course is not telling us that we don't let the world handle the body however it needs to handle the body. That's not at all what it's talking about.
So there's consequences for being a serial killer?
There is in this world.
Yeah. Okay.
But there is no consequence to your inheritance as the Holy Son of God. And so it's asking us to see that serial killer, even if that serial killer is executed, as the Holy Son of God, and not to see him as him or her as anything else other than that. But what we do with the body, how we dispose of the body, how we take care of the body, we just got through reading. The body isn't real in the first place. So why would we want to confuse the two?
Oh boy, I was going to come up with something good.
No, what I was thinking about was that it's always interesting how much energy we'll put into defending punishment. Nothing bothers anybody more than thinking the serial killer might get off.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately we don't feel good unless there is punishment. And the Course teaches that that is the most insane belief we have, is the idea that punishment is correction.
Especially since we all believe we're one and we see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or to believe that just because I electrocuted something, I changed something. The cause is still intact. Whatever it was that caused serial killers, that is still intact. That was not destroyed by getting rid of the serial killer, or there would never be any more serial killers. But the fact that they keep on showing up more and more and more, it seems like killing the serial killers themselves is not the solution. The solution is to change whatever it was that created the serial killer to begin with. We need to go to the causative level, and that's what the Course is trying to take us to now. And that's a powerful level to get to. We're going to start to withdraw our attention from the effects, and we're going to start putting all our attention on the cause. And to people around us, they won't understand that we are also part of the healing, and they'll think that you are not really caring enough about what's going on around you in the world. And they don't know that you're beginning to focus on the cause. And the cause is there's not enough awareness of oneness, there's not enough awareness of love, there's not enough awareness of the truth. And so you know that your job is just to stay aware of the truth. And if you stay aware of the truth, you will be taken care of at the level of the body in the world. You'll never want or need anything in the world if you fulfill your function for coming here. And your function for coming here was to stay aware of the truth while we are here among the people who are not aware of the truth. We are just supposed to stay aware of it for everybody. And if you do that, you will always be taken care of. So every time we come here and we become aware of the truth, we fulfill our function. And when we fulfill our function, we start to see something cool happen to us when we walk out the door.
So that's how the salvation of the world depends on me.
That's exactly how the salvation of the world depends on me. It depends on me because the world won't get it until I do. The world won't get it until I do. I won't get it until you do. But I can get it for you. So I'll remember it for you. I'll love you when you think you don't deserve love. I remember you're powerful even when you think you're weak. I'll remember it for you.
But that can only happen if we remember that I'm not a body, I am free. I'm still as God created me.
Ha! You know, it's even easier than that. That's what I love about questions. The Course says that it would seem very difficult to think that the only way you could get there was not to see yourself as a body. That would seem like a tremendous chore in and of itself. So it says, rather than try to focus on whether or not the body is real, the Course says, focus on the idea of innocence. So rather than pondering how can you not see the body is real, the Course says, every time that thought comes up, what you really just should do is just focus on the idea of innocence. And if you focus on the idea of innocence, it will totally correct your perception of the body. Automatically. You won't have to worry about the right way to see the body if you focus on innocence. And see, to me, that's easier than trying to walk around all day thinking I'm not a body, running into telephone poles and stuff. You know.
Carl, bring it down.
Okay.
Because it's so high sometimes.
That's what we need.
I get it, and then my heart doesn't get it.
Okay.
So when I'm in pain,
there's
something going on in my life,
and
my ego's involved in this pain, I remember that this has already been fixed. But that ego wants an expression of tears, anger, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
To be real,
mm-hmm.
how do you express that in ego? You say, oh, I'm positive spiritual mind here.
No, you know, actually, just the opposite. What you do is you become much more honest with yourself about all the feelings that you have. Actually, it's just the opposite. It's like now that I'm beginning to realize who I am beyond my body, I'm much more honest with myself about the feelings that I have as a man. I'm much more quick. I cry faster. I admit that I'm afraid faster. I get angry faster and admit that I'm angry. If I feel depressed, I just go ahead and say, hey, I feel depressed. It's like right now I'm getting so in touch with feelings and emotions I've never had before because my male ego taught me that it wasn't okay to feel all my feelings. But as I began to realize I was more than a man, then all of a sudden I start to feel the power of being a man. So the truth is, you enjoy your body more and your human identity more the more you recognize who you are beyond it. That's when you can really feel everything, and you can sense everything and smell everything. The whole thing becomes much more brighter when you really start to accept that you're more than a body. Then you can really enjoy your body. You can really stop attacking your body with guilt. Of course, says guilt is what kills the body and makes the body sick. We've learned all these guilty thoughts about our body, and he says we're attacking our bodies all the time with these beliefs that we learn that we're guilty and that we're sinful, and that's what's destroying the body, is the belief in guilt and the belief in sin. And that if we recognize we were innocent, we would realize we didn't deserve to be punished, and so therefore you wouldn't attract attack, because an innocent mind doesn't believe it deserves to be punished. And so so therefore you would stop attracting the drama to yourself, because you wouldn't believe that you deserved it anymore. That's deep. And then everybody said, okay, what do I need to remember? That sounds kind of like, what do I need to remember? That you're innocent. That doesn't mean you don't make mistakes. It doesn't mean you don't make errors. It don't mean that the errors won't be corrected. It doesn't mean you'll always do everything perfectly at this level. But you're innocent. Who you are and what you are is innocent. That's the one idea that will undermine all pain and attack. And it's the least popular idea in the world. It's the idea of sin and the idea of guilt. Everybody gets off on it. The idea of attack, come on with it. But you talk about some innocence, and then the Course says we see innocence as like really meek and vulnerable and defenseless. So the idea of being innocent doesn't appeal to us, because the Course says we think it means we're leaving ourselves defenseless, and now we can just totally be attacked, because we associate attack with strength and peace with weakness. So even as we ask for peace, subconsciously we think we're asking for weakness. And that's why there's not a lot of enthusiasm about peace. And that's why we attack real fast, because we think attack is going to make us strong, but if you be too peaceful, you're going to be weak. You're not strong until you're peaceful. When you're peaceful, that's when you're invulnerable, because your peaceful energy will not attract attack. Your peaceful vibration will not attract attack. That's why peace is stronger than conflict. Peace protects you because it won't let the attack be drawn to you. Then the mind goes, how can I possibly have peace in this world? And then the Course says, by realizing you are not in the world. By realizing there's a part of you that's outside of this experience. And when you realize there's a part of you outside of your experience that's looking out for you, you will start to feel more peace. When you know you're not alone and there's something greater than you that's outside of what you can see that's looking out for you, you will start to feel more peace in the world, because you won't feel alone. And you just start to cultivate your ability to hear what this part of you is saying to you. And that'll be the most important thing to you in the world, is to have this clear communication between you and what put you here. That's going to be the most important. It's going to be more important than bills. It's going to be more important than special relationships. It's going to be more important than anything you ever thought was important. It's going to be you being in constant contact with home base, because you're going to see that every time you listen to home base, everything turns out fine, even here. And the Course teaches you how to recognize the voice of home base. That's the whole purpose of it. All right, I'm gonna stop here. And I welcome the class, the questions. Don't think for a second that I'm not okay with that. I love it. Because anything you ask is something that a lot of people's wondering about, and I've certainly asked myself a lot of times. And sometimes when I answer you, it may feel like an attack to your ego, but it's not an attack to your ego. The Course says it's just natural for the ego to react that way when it gets the truth.
That was the foundation of what I was asking about the serial killer, was that the feeling sometimes that I have that I'm schizophrenic, and that I have this part of me called the ego that wants to do A, B, C, D, and E and winds up mucking up my life beautifully, and then I have this part of me that is connected to home base, and that I'm trying to retrain my mind to listen more to, and by God is my mantra, Holy Spirit, talk to me.
Amen.
And living in this world where these bodies are, and yet knowing that I'm more than that, and I'm permanent, it just, I get this schizophrenic kind of feeling sometimes that I'm trying to bridge.
You must give yourself permission to be on this schizophrenic, disoriented, confused bridge. Yes, it's like, don't try to skip over that. That is a natural stage of transition. The Course says that to us, and we need to get that. That's a stage you go through when you let go of one way and you accept in a new way. As you flip back and forth between them, you get this. You see the split. That's normal. So don't try to figure out what to do with it.
Okay.
Keep giving yourself the truth, and then you're going to move over into the other thought system more and more and more and more, and there won't be that opposition.
That's
It'll be less and less and less and less.
And the other thing that you were saying that resonated very strongly with me was, I admit when I'm depressed, I admit when I'm lonely, I admit when my body wants to be touched and blah-de-blah-de-blah, that doesn't fit, you know, in the category of peace, love, and the Almighty. But then I'm thinking, okay, so we just are honest with ourselves, we shed the light of God onto that, and that is how that dissipates.
And even that is true, because there's so many truth answers, and what you just said is true. But rather than take myself through all that reasoning, I try to go to straight to, I am innocent. You see what I mean? And that's what makes it, that's very powerful though. You have to be so spiritually strong to do that, to just go right to the core thing and go, just cut out the reasoning altogether and then go straight to what I know, no matter what the problem, the answer is the same. I am innocent, even if I don't believe it, even if I don't feel it, even if I don't see it, even if I don't hear it, even if there's no evidence around it anywhere, even if I feel like I'm the guiltiest person that ever walked the earth, I am innocent. That's the thought.
This whole thing with the serial killer, what you helped me with was that phrase. That's a part of me I can't stand. Would you help me with that?
Well, you just said it. That's just...
See, so when I'm in my garage, I have had rage all by myself that if somebody had been there, somebody would be dead. So then I can look at a serial killer and I can say, whoa, that's part of me I can't stand.
Absolutely.
And then I get my innocence checked in, and then there's a spark of innocence there for the other person.
You know what's so cool, though, is that no matter how you came to that conclusion, you came to the conclusion to love. So I know whatever your reasoning was correct, whether I even follow it or not. And I think that's so cool. You know, if I'm sitting up in front of a person and that person is saying whatever they're saying, but they're getting back to the point like you're doing, that you want to be a more loving person, a more peaceful person, then how could what that person be looking at be wrong if it's peace all along the description? You know? Whoa! You know, like, I don't have to argue, is your path correct? I know your path is correct if you're sitting up there and you're being peaceful. And then I can hear about your stories about your path, which would be great entertainment. But it wouldn't be me listening to you trying to show you where you're wrong and show you where I disagree and show you where I got another point of view from you. That's not what I'm listening to you for. I'm listening to hear all the cool stuff that happened to you that made you so cool. That's what I'm listening for. So thank you for sharing with me with this money, because I need it. Amen. There's going to be a party Saturday night after the seminar. So let's do a little closing prayer. I'd like you to tell yourself that you're willing to allow permanent happiness to come into your life. I am willing to allow permanent happiness to come into my life now. I am willing to allow permanent happiness to come into my life right now. Right now? Right now, the only time there is, the permanent time there is. And so just realize that whenever you all say anything to me, make a comment or ask a question, I'm listening to it with the utmost respect, and I'm never trying to hurt or attack. And if it appears that way, that's never my purpose. Never, never, ever, ever. So I really, really value you all. See you next time. Yeah. Yeah.